Good morning.
Morning. Sorry again for my computer problems on Saturday.
That was all right. I wasn't having that much fun anyway.
Well, hopefully we can schedule it again and I'll try to make it more fun.
Okay, good. That'd be great.
I think Kendra's got it set for the Wednesday after our hearing. So I think that sounds good to me. So.
Okay, great. Kendra, is that like Star Wars or Star Trek? What is that?
It is. May the Force be with you.
Yes. Yes. You have to teach me how to do that. I love it.
So if you go down to the bottom of your screen where there's the mute button and then stop video, if you click on the up arrow next to stop video, you'll see choose virtual background. And if you click on that, that pulls up a page. And then you'll see a little plus sign across from choose virtual background. If you click on that and then add image, then you can add an image that you've saved like to your desktop. So that's how you change it. You can also do short videos depending on your internet connection. But you have to save
it
to your computer. There you go, yeah.
Wow. So you do that once, and then every time you come up after that, it comes up with the same one unless you've changed it?
Yep, it would be the same one, or you can keep going in and changing it like I do. Huh. And then there's also like a blur background option to just kind of put a blurry screen behind you. That's what I used to use when I would go to like coffee shops and stuff like that.
Well, interesting. I'll have to look around.
All right. Well, is that enough for today's meeting? See you tomorrow.
Good morning. How are you guys?
All right. It looks like we're all here. Let's go ahead and get started. And Mark, I think you are up.
Good morning, commissioners. I sent everybody late yesterday afternoon an overview of my reports, and I want to take a few minutes to walk through that, and I'll do that somewhat quickly and then invite any comments and certainly very important feedback from the commissioners as I go through that exercise. And I changed up a little bit in terms of the order of what I typically provide as an overview. And I wanted to start with what I think is a very timely and important topic, and that is an update on priority-based budgeting. I know that that has been an important initiative for the county for almost, pretty close to 2 years with that affiliation, that association. And I had a chance to have a really good detailed conversation with the ResourceX CEO, Chris Fabian. Actually, we connected in a lot of ways. We have a lot of mutual colleagues that we've worked with. I actually worked very closely with his mentor, Mike Freeman, at one point in with the city of Fort Collins. So familiar with the background in terms of the genesis for the priority-based budgeting. So a much better understanding of that. But the outcome of our discussion is five options, which I have shown you as an attachment or as within the body of the email, five options that Chris has outlined for us going forward. And I want to draw your attention to number four, which is the pause. And I think that under all the circumstances, and especially with what we've got going on right now, as far as staff commitments with the COVID crisis and so forth, I really think that this is a very viable option for the county at this point in time. What Chris is willing to do is to allow us to hit the pause button for the PBB project. And that would be at least a year that we would be able to do that. we would, for that point in time, we would pay a fee of approximately $3,000, which when I check with Greg Winkler with DOLA, they're willing to split the difference with us. So our cost would be $1,500. We would not lose any data. That would all be retained. And maybe even more importantly, we would still have the opportunity to access all the resources that are made available with Resource X. So in other words, if they do a webinar, if they have a technical update that they do, we would still be able to fully participate in all of that. They're really truly willing to work with us on that going forward. So I'll invite any questions and Q&A on that, because I know that might be a larger topic, but I think that my recommendation would certainly be that the pause might be our best option at this particular point in time.
So I have a generalized question, not necessarily particularly about PBB, but about all the other things that we're working on around the county. I understand that our staff has been stressed and had to work at remote locations and take on different functions. I just wonder if this is truly going to be an ongoing stressor for our staff, or at what point will we get back to more normalized operations and we actually could consider proceeding with PBB?
Tim, good question. And that's why I think that this offers the best option going forward, because when you have identified your new administrative team, you may find that you've got some folks that have a tremendous amount of expertise in this arena, maybe have worked with it, maybe have come from an organization that's used PBB extensively. So you'd hate to, you know, cut off and go to something, for instance, to say we're going to terminate our relationship at this point in time. So I think it allows you to keep those options open. The other thing that it does, commissioners, is it also, it allows you perhaps, as you come out of our whole COVID-19 planning regime, it allows you to maybe use PBB in terms of how you've reprioritized your budgeting going forward. And so it may be a very useful tool from that particular circumstance, and you'd hate to lose that opportunity as well.
So I'm supportive. Go ahead, Doug.
No, I think that's fine. I'll go ahead then. So I'm supportive of the pause, and for a couple reasons. And again, I committed and I believed that we need to have that opportunity to test this thing and get a full function of it and see whether it's worthy or not to continue on. So, but at the same point in time, I fully believe the pause would be right now would be very, you know, opportune because of a couple things. COVID-19, number one, but then also, you know, the main staff and I think, you know, the county manager commitment to this needs to be there. Again, I'm committed for 1 year to see what the hell this thing does, and whether it'll change the oil for me or not. So so I want to see what that'll do. And I'm willing to, I think it's a great offer for them to do that, and, you know, and I don't want to walk away. And I still really seriously question the real benefits of it, but I want to see it. And again, I know Mr. Corrigan likes the whole concept, but I really want to see it in action. And then we can decide whether we got it up and functioning, whether it's worth the continued $30,000 a year on it. So I'm supportive. Beth?
Yeah, I agree with both of you. I think the other thing I would just add is that I would think that just jumping ship now without kind of a full analysis would really be a disservice to our employees that have already put a lot of time into this. And I know, you know, we have kind of the complainers who are the loudest, but we also have some people who really believe this is a valuable tool. And so I think we have to really be listening to what all of our staff is saying and not just the people who talk the loudest about it as we move forward. So I think the pause is a great option, especially considering that Dola will share that cost with us and will allow us to continue to take a look at it, but not commit that full $30,000 and not be committed to full implementation while we're trying to do all this other stuff right now.
So, and I'm supportive of the pause too. I mean, it was a rhetorical question about the capacity of our staff. I take it that since our cost would be $1,500 for a pause, we could also unpause at any time we wanted to. We're not actually making a commitment to fully pause for 1 year.
That's exactly right, Tim. Excellent question. We can go at any time and go live. Absolutely.
Okay. Then.
And then, did I understand correctly that they also have some kind of like on that number one, you talked about some services they're offering in kind of an a la carte way, like the program mapping exercise. And so, I guess, what are we not getting with this pause option? I mean, because it sounds like we still have access to the data. And does that, but does it mean we couldn't edit any of it during that time?
That's a good question. There may be some limitations in terms of how we could go ahead and manipulate our data. I'd say manipulate, but right. Certainly we can access our data, but what we can do in terms of doing some of the exercises associated with this. But we're more than happy to flesh that out a little bit more with Chris as well. I can tell you, and I mean that sincerely, he was very, very, very assist-driven, wanted to be very facilitative, really wants to see this potentially be successful with us. And so he wants to, for a better term, still keep us in the family. So that's good news. You might also be aware, and probably Doug, maybe you are especially, Moffitt County had also been within the PB regime. They recently stepped away from it, but there's an interest in having them brought back into the fold again. So there's an interest not only on the part of Resource X, but also DOLA. So as we ramp this back up again, we may find that there are other jurisdictions around us that we're going to have some good company in terms of ramping things back up again. And I think that that's a positive note as well.
Well, I think the bottom line, and you alluded to it earlier, Mark, which is we need an administrative champion to be pushing this project forward. And I think that's outside of what we expected you to do during this interim period. So we're on hold for that, no matter what.
Yeah. Thanks for that good feedback. Go ahead, Doug.
I find it interesting that Dola and Greg, or whether, you know, why they're championing, whether they think that there's holes in the current budgeting scheme, or whether they feel there's deficiencies and the rest. And I don't know. It's just kind of, it just has a little tainted smell to me a little bit that Dola would be selling this thing. So I'm not sure exactly why. Call me skeptical. Just wondering a little.
You are skeptical, Doug. That's why we love you.
So this is really interesting, because I thought that this was the thread. So as I talked with Chris a little bit more, I said, Chris, this sounds really familiar to a program that was, it was a very noteworthy book called The Price of Government. And the book came out about, it's now been probably about 16, 17 years ago. And it was written by David Osborne, who was the co-author of Reinventing Government. And that was way back to the Al Gore years, if you remember that. Well, this all came about because the state of Washington, when they found themselves in a budget crisis, they came up with this idea of program-based budgeting. And that was really where this was all born, was out of that budget crisis for the state and how they began to prioritize their programs. So this thing is morphed into what's now known as PVB, but that's where it all started. But I thought it was interesting. It started with a budget crisis and how they came up with this particular methodology.
You know, that's interesting, because it was the state of Washington where we got Communities That Care came out of as well.
There's a lot of assholes up there trying to change things. That's where I'm from, Mark. That's why I make that comment. The only other thing I guess I would say, you know, Tim said we wouldn't necessarily be charging Mark with taking this on. I would agree with that, but at the same time, I would say that what I keep pushing is, I think, helping our staff to see this as a tool. And if there are ways to incorporate this data in some analysis, and mostly, you know, with the department heads that feel comfortable with it and where it's a good fit, I don't think we want to push anyone over the edge, which we could very well do right now, given how crazy things are. But as we go through the 2021 budget, which, Mark, I know you'll be here for at least the beginnings of that, I would still advocate for us, especially the staff that feels comfortable, really showing us what they can do with it, you know, and coming up with some creative ideas about how to use it.
You bet, Beth. I'd be happy to weave that into as we begin to build our 21 budget. Absolutely. I think there can be some really important guides on that with the PBB. So happy to do that and incorporate that. You bet.
I actually think that the department heads learned a little bit and going through it as well without even the program, just without the Resource X program, the PB budgeting program. I mean, I think that they realized that, you know, to separate out programs and kind of think about them as programs and concepts outside of the computer software too. So anyhow, I'll let you take it on, Art. You're up.
Let me interrupt for a minute as before Mark moves forward. I'm looking at my little cheat sheet from Deanna for time frame, and it called for legal to step in at 10:45. Do we want to delay legal and everything else a little bit to let Mark finish his presentation, or do we want to get back onto Deanna's schedule, which shows legal at 10:45 and DHS at 11:30 and IT at 11:40? And then come back to Mark.
I guess I'm confused about why we only gave Mark 15 minutes, but we gave legal 45 minutes.
Because Mark is super efficient, and so we're interrupting.
Maybe we should find out how much time legal needs and then decide.
That's a good idea. I see you're on the line, Eric. What have you got for us today?
Half a minute. I just wanted to explain Paul Sachs's email about the Zirkle plan.
That'd be great. Let's, without objection, I would like to move on to Eric so we can get him done with and get him back to work.
So Zirkle's in the process of applying for an SUP. It might actually be a CUP, I don't remember. Anyway, the point is that they need to have a deed restriction lifted or modified. Years ago, the county sold its interest in some real property. We didn't really understand what the interest was, but conveyed that to Mr. Tim McGill, who's a prospector here in Hans Peak, and that quitclaim deed contained a deed restriction prohibiting the building of any structure on the property. And now that Zirkle has received Mr. McGill's blessing to build their antenna on his property, that deed restriction would prohibit them from doing that. So the plan is, and the proposal is, that the county modify that deed restriction to allow the building of that telecommunications antenna if the board's inclined to do that. I did do some research and determined that the reason for the deed restriction in the first place was that the amount of the interest was very, very unclear. The title history is very, very clouded, and we could just carve out an exception to the deed restriction to allow the telecommunication facility, but nothing else. And that's what his email was about. Since then, Christy and I have asked Paul just to contact us directly, not include the board in those communications. That's all I have.
So can we ask questions then, Eric?
Of course.
Yeah, so I guess, and I remember doing that. I was part of the board when we did that. And the big part of the reason was it's a small little claim in the first place, and we didn't want to grant over that interest that the county acquired for tax, probably some tax sales or something, whatever. I can't remember, but we didn't want to, damn sure didn't want to make sure we had a house sitting on, you know, 100 square feet of property, so sitting up there. So that was probably that thing. So I'm not going to have a problem removing the deed restriction. Christy also, or not removing it, maybe modifying it. I wouldn't want to take off the thing carte blanche. But so part of the Christy also was talking about the fact that there's like 15 different interests, and there's only 1/16th or 1/15th or something like that. Is that a problem for us as well?
As best as I can tell, there are 16 pieces of interest there. Pieces is not a legal term, but it's pretty convoluted and hard to explain. But Mr. McGill owns, we think, 11 sixteenths. But thus far, all of the other determined property owners have signed off and or approved to allow Zirkle to build the antenna, which we would require as part of the permit process.
Okay, that sounds good, Eric. Yeah, so I guess, you know, the CUP, I guess Christy's got it lined up to go through, and then it would be contingent upon us modifying that deed restriction, which we would do during a normal, which would be a condition of approval on the CUP, and then we would hear that at a later point in time to modify that deed restriction, I assume.
I'll probably just bring it back to you prior to that to get it done so that there doesn't have to be a requirement in the permit. Paul and I are working to get it drafted right now.
That sounds good. I mean, heck, it's a public purpose too. So, I mean, that, you know, that's all good.
Thank you, commissioners. That's all I have today.
Any other questions? Go ahead, John.
Yeah, I have a question. Yeah, I have a question. So for you, Eric, real quickly here, so we don't need to spend a lot of time on it, but we got the email from Sheriff Wiggins this morning about the fire ban, and then he's attached with that the, you know, the potential fire ban. He attached with it our resolution, and which then our resolution goes through and says that, his suggestion was that every fire would need to have a permit, including ag burns, and I read through the, which would be totally new from what we've been doing, and so the especially burning ditches. So then, when it goes through, when I went through the resolution that we adopted, that it specifically exempted burning ditches in the first place. So I'm a little confused. I'm not opposed to, especially, it's pretty sad when we have to legislate stupidity again, but that's what we get to do sometimes. But if ranchers, myself included, need to get burn permits to burn our ditches, I guess I'm fine with that too. So just to increase the level of safety out here. So anyhow, Eric, could you help on the ag burning permit and not?
It's funny, I've been doing a little bit of research already this morning, and just, I'm looking at the legality of prohibiting ag burns. It's a touchy area for sure. Some folks would see that as a prohibition, requiring them to get a permit, right? It's an extreme view, I get that, but it's problematic in some people's minds. So I'm doing some research right now on being able to require a permit.
Well, what my comment would be is what would be problematic for getting a burn permit would be the timeliness of getting it. Because if you're wanting to burn a ditch and you look out, you see that Thursday is going to be a nice low wind day, and Wednesday you ask for a permit, they can't get it back to you until Friday or the following Monday, you just lost your opportunity. And I don't know how we make sure that the fire districts are timely in giving out those permits, but I would be insistent upon that.
As I recall, I did some work on the open burn permit process, but it's been so long ago now. What I recall is that you can get a permit and it's not date specific. It's tied to the weather and air quality and those kinds of things, but you're not limited on what days you can do it. So if you have a permit, again, this is what I recall. I could be wrong now or things may have changed, but you just get the permit and then you can burn when the conditions are right.
So we'll know more after you research some more and give us a memo or something on that, I assume, Eric, then, right?
Yes.
I have a different question.
Go ahead.
Last week we talked a little bit about the ability to differentiate between like hotels versus short-term rentals that are maybe in someone's residence. And we didn't go into a lot of depth about that, but Grand County posted their kind of timeline for reopening on their website. And the way it was written made me think that the state has in some way restricted short-term rentals, like in a residence, but has not restricted hotels. And I didn't remember that being the case, but I was wondering if maybe legal could just help us follow up on that, because I was not aware of that. I can send you what Grand County posted that made me think that, and I'm wondering if you guys have any information or could do a little research on that.
We have it. Linnea and I have been emailing each other about that this morning. Linnea, can you please forward? It's an article, but start with that, but maybe forward that section that you emailed me about on this issue.
Yep.
Thank you.
So did the state place some kind of restriction on short-term rentals? I mean, is there a short answer to that question?
Yes, is the short answer.
They did. Okay. Well, that's helpful to know, and we'll look for that information. Thank you.
And Eric, okay, no, we're good at providing a short answer. That was very good.
Those are all my questions.
I have no questions for legal, so I think we got through them all. Eric, Linnea, thank you very much. And then let's see, on my timeline here, we've got until 10:30 for DHS, so we can, or until 11:30, I mean. So let's go back to Mark, and you can continue your update, Mark.
Thanks, Tim. The next item I'm going to talk about, I'll go ahead and dovetail into maybe a larger discussion of the recovery plan that we discussed in some length on Friday. But in terms of the county transitional plan, what this specifically refers to is county facilities. And we went ahead and assembled the department heads to have a very important conversation about what the reopening of county facilities, what kind of a timeline, what kind of a schedule, what kind of a protocol procedure would be followed for that. We've had some good, very detailed, very comprehensive conversations with all the department heads. What we've essentially done is we've created a steering committee of seven people consisting of department heads that are gonna go ahead and provide some more on task direction for the transitional plan. And then we've asked all the department heads to participate in an advisory group capacity. So we've got to kind of have two levels that are working through this particular process. What we would like to have is a draft document by Friday of this week, which outlines specifically what we're going to be doing for all county facilities. And what we're going to try and do, commissioners, is start with general guidelines for the entire county, but then be very specific to specific facilities. because it's not going to be a one size fits all. We're going to have probably different standards and circumstances for the CLEF, for the Justice Center, than the fairgrounds, than the courthouse. So we're going to have an appendices within that document that's going to go ahead and list what the available protocols are going to be. Some of the things we're talking about is following all the good practices, all the good mitigation protocols we've been talking about for the past several weeks, some physical barriers within some of those buildings. In other words, when people get access, when the public gets access, will we have a specific one-way configuration, the signage that we're going to use, the sign-in sheets that we're going to talk about, by appointment perhaps for some particular department. So we'll go into more detail on all of that relative to that particular plan and that particular program. Again, as we discussed also on Friday, commissioners, we're operating under the premise that at this point in time, we will not be reopening the courthouse facility, the county facilities, until on or about June 1st at the earliest. One of the very important questions that I asked was, are we able now to still conduct our business in an efficient manner and not be any kind of an obstacle or an impediment to our community members, to our customers? And I quite frankly, the answer was a resounding yes, that we're still able to conduct our business in good shape, and we don't see any restrictions along those lines. So we feel comfortable with this idea that June 1st would be the earliest that we talk about some kind of a graduated reopening. And with that, Tim, maybe I'll pause, and I'll certainly be happy to answer any questions that the commissioners may have.
So I just have a quick question. I assume that the sheriff has been involved, because I know I've heard him on the EOC calls say that he and Chief Christensen were working on a reopening plan for the CLEF. So just making sure we're not duplicating efforts and that you're really just integrating what he's been working on.
Beth, good question. Sheriff Wiggins has been very much right on the ground floor for these discussions, and has been very proactive in terms of what the law enforcement will do for those particular associated facilities. So it's been great to have the sheriff on board, and they're right on top of it.
My question is with Kim and the clerk's office, how her operation fits in, especially regarding elections, which I realize I don't believe there's any elections until sometime in June.
Tim, good question. And Kim has been very helpful. Not only has she thought about how they specifically want to configure the clerk motor vehicle office, and again, that gets into a little bit of the one-way traffic and the distancing that we'll have, the sneeze guards that we will have probably more than likely in place. But one thing that Kim has also been kind enough to do is to do some cross comparisons with other jurisdictions. So we're getting some good comparator information and being prepared for that, because Kim has been very upfront about saying, I want to be prepared and ready when we get into that particular part of the season and how we're going to respond accordingly. So that is very much a part of the conversation as we move forward.
Thank you. Any further questions or discussion on that item?
I guess I would just ask if Robin has any updates on the messaging side of that. I know she was going to work on signage for the doors, and then I heard her say on the EOC this morning, kind of just sending the message, like, Route County government is open, you know, for even if the buildings aren't, kind of a message.
Yeah, sure. So what we thought we would do on our website, we have listed all the county services that are open with links. But again, websites are passive forms of communication, so people don't always go to that. So the social media is probably our best way of getting that information out there. So the idea that we had was Deanna, Cheryl, and I are going to work on both for Facebook and Instagram to just go through every office, probably highlight one office a day to kind of say, oh, the clerk's office, you know, is busy working, and here are the things that you can do online, and do it for every single office. And actually, Deanna is going to come in one of these days and take photos with her mask on, of course, of employees working, because we want to make sure that the community knows that they can get the services done online, and that we are working. It's just that the courthouse is closed. So that's the plan.
And Beth, as a follow-up to, again, our conversation last Friday, and Robin's been very helpful with helping us with this, we are changing out all the information on the outside entrances to the buildings, which, you're right, some of that information was dated, was not probably now at this point in time, not as well organized and not as clear to everybody. So I asked on Friday facilities to update all of that. So if not already today, you'll begin to see some of those new signs be installed on the entrance access egress areas of all the county facilities.
And Mark, the thing that Cheryl and I had talked about, I can't remember if we talked about this, Mark, we have so many conversations. There is a great sign at the top that says the county courthouse is closed to the public, but it is, you can only see it if you walk up to the door. So maybe that sign is the sign that facilities could make bigger, so that if I drive up in my car, I can see it without getting out of my car.
Yeah. What about considering a similar sign at the entrance to the parking lot too? You know, like a laminated on it. Like, I'm thinking, you know, the city has signs all over on their trails and like something like that.
That's maybe a great worth idea. Considering.
You bet. Unlike, for instance, Beth, the sandwich board sign, you bet. That's easily done and very easily facilitated.
So this is Doug. Does the, Mark, I assume that you and Ray are also continuing working on the multi-purpose building. And then the second question, I guess we've been doing all right up there at Road and Bridge Shop, and those guys have been following our direction and sign-in sheet and all the stuff they were supposed to be doing when they have in their department head meetings as well. So,
you bet. Still, you're right, Doug. That protocol is still being followed and is still in place. You bet. Absolutely. You bet. Tim, let me move on to the budget, and really, there's just a quick couple few remarks on that right now, because we are anticipating that we'll get quotations and bids on May 15th. So, you know, all things considered, coming up pretty soon. And those are going to be the bids that we're going to get back on asphalt, oil prices, gravel, some of those, all those associated outlays for some of the cap projects that we had talked about this coming building season. With that information in mind, we would then be prepared to come back to the commissioners and have that conversation about how you want to prioritize those capital budgets. And more specifically, we talked about whether or not, how we want to weigh those minor bridge replacement projects with some of our asphalt, paving, chip seal, and those particular associated projects. So we'll be able to come back with some more, much more detailed budget numbers for everybody, so that, again, you can give us good direction going forward. Once we have that, then we can use that to finalize the amended budget that we'll then bring back to the commissioners to be able to go ahead and to put that in a finalized format for you, and let that be a memorialized document for us moving forward. So that's all the news on that, except I have a meeting with Dan on Wednesday where we're going to sit down and we're going to begin to finalize the budget calendar for fiscal year 21. And again, we'll be walking that back into the commissioner, so you have an idea what that outline looks like coming forward.
So I don't know if I just missed that document from Dan, or if did anyone? Yeah, I don't remember seeing this financial update that you referred to, Mark.
Okay, let me. I apologize, Beth, Tim, Doug. Let me double check with Dan. I looked at it, I scanned it, and I thought that I saw you guys associated with that, but we'll make sure you get that.
It's possible I missed it too. There's so many emails right now, so resending it wouldn't
there are,
be a bad
but
idea.
At the same time, that we may not have routed it. We'll do that right away today. When I scanned it, the good news is that for now, we're not seeing some of those appreciable drops that we thought were certainly going to be a part of this budget for FY20. But, you know, we know that's going to change in the coming months. But for right now, we're still holding our own at this particular point in time. But we'll get that out to you by all means. The next item that I wanted to visit with the commissioners about is we had a good conversation, or I had a good conversation with Craig with GFOA. And Tim, very specifically getting to something that you wanted us to follow up on, Craig is well aware that there are no funds in the FY20 budget devoted to GFOA for this current fiscal year. So he's well aware of that. Much the same as Chris with Resource X on the PBB side. Once again, he's making a very generous offer to say, if you guys need a quick call, some technical advice, anything we can do for you, we're always willing to do that for you on a pro bono basis. What we're going to be doing is, again, as I think Craig used this as a descriptor when he visited with the board a few weeks ago, we're moving forward, but probably at a slower pace in terms of standing up some of those modules. One of the things that Craig pointed out, however, is that we may have modules right now, in other words, licenses on specific modules that we're paying for, but that are not being utilized or have not gone live. If that's the case, we have an opportunity, and we will seize that opportunity to talk with Munis and say, we're not going to pay for those items that we've not gone ahead and implemented at this point in time. And Craig said he's more than happy to assist us in that discussion, that dialogue with Munis, in case there's any problem or any issues that they have. But I think we can recover probably some funds on that end before we go ahead and we once again stand up some of those particular components going forward. So any questions on that? Happy to do so.
Yeah, I feel like a voice in the wilderness asking for some kind of a graphical schedule. And I don't even care anymore if it is a, if it's truly graphical or a critical path schedule, but I don't feel like we have any kind of a schedule or any set of expectations for implementation. That we've been talking around this and talking around this, and I find it frustrating. I've used this phrase many, many times in the past, which is a bad schedule is better than no schedule at all, because at least it gives us something to talk about, and totally recognizing that it may need to be slipped or adjusted or whatever. But I guess even if it's just written down as a series of line items as to the expectations of when certain modules will be implemented would be helpful for me.
You bet, Tim. Well, let me get back with Dan, and Chris Cooper has been assigned to many of the Munis functions. Let me ask them to go ahead and to put that together for everybody's review.
Yeah, because I mean, frankly, at this point, I don't even have a clue anymore as to when certain modules are expected to come online. And that's fine. Maybe I don't need to know specifically, but I'd like to know that our staff has some benchmarks that they're targeting.
So I would second what Tim said about having, it just feels like this is kind of drifting off into the wilderness. It was very concrete for like a week, and now it's just sort of like out there. And I guess the one thing I would bring to your attention, Mark, is that I'll just be totally blunt. Accounting is dragging their feet on all of this and appears to want to either not do it or make sure that they have every single T crossed and I dotted before they move forward. They just seem uncomfortable with moving forward if there's any gray area at all. And so a huge part of what has needed to happen is pushing them to do these things. And one of the ways, one of the really important things that happened with GFOA was assigning leadership on some of these projects outside of the accounting department so that they were not overwhelmed with having to do both the implementation and the project management. And so I feel a little nervous about, I mean, does GFOA no longer have any role in this? I'm so confused about what Craig thinks his job is going forward, or does he not have any involvement? It just feels really unclear.
Beth, good question. In terms of Craig's role and GFOA's role at this point in time, my takeaway from our conversation was that they, GFOA, completed the task that was assigned to them in terms of a playbook, if you will, of an outline for the way that this should be implemented going forward. Talking about the people, the players that would be involved with this, and they submitted that report and feel like at this point, it's now incumbent upon the county to go ahead and take everything forward. So my main takeaway was right now, GFOA feels like they've completed what was assigned to them, and now it's now in the on the plate for the county going forward. The county and Munis and those representatives.
So included in that deliverable was a schedule that Craig asserted was included in a presentation, but we could not see it because of formatting problems. So I don't care if the schedule that Craig supposedly prepared is completely irrelevant now. I would still like to see whatever schedule that he claims that he produced before I would be willing to agree that they had completed their work. And the last comment I would make is that I've been doing this kind of shit long enough that the surest way to never get something done is to not have a schedule for it.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at the last email I think we got from him, which was March 10th. And at the bottom, it says next steps based on this version, I'll begin getting the MS project file together. I'll continue to keep my foot on the gas pedal with each of the project managers. The outcome of the project module demos, blah, blah, blah. So, and we haven't received anything from him since then. If somebody else has, we didn't see it, I believe.
Could Beth, would you be kind enough to maybe send that? That was prior to my arrival.
I will forward it to everyone just so you all can see what I'm looking at here. And if somebody thinks they have something more recent from Craig, then let us know.
So I think we need to put our feet on the gas pedal here a little bit, and we need to direct Mark to do that a little bit. I don't have a problem with Craig stepping back and because I think it is kind of in our, the ball's in our court, so we need to start doing something with it offensively. So I kind of thought we were two our champions of each of those things, and we need to figure out how we're moving forward on them. So, and I agree with Commissioner Corrigan as well. Without some type of a time frame, this thing will linger forever. So we just need to continue put this. This is hell of a lot more important to me than PBB, and so it is something we really can get action out of right now, and that we need to know what's happening. So,
you bet. Okay.
So I was going to say a similar thing, which is that what we've discussed is that there needs to be someone who's kind of the overall project manager that's keeping things moving forward. And that was Dan Weinheimer. And then it was kind of no one. And then I think we thought it was going to be Mark. Am I right about that?
Well, I think that it was going to be the county manager, reviewing and overseeing the work of that management group that had been put together. So
it's fine. I don't care who it is, but I think Mark probably is responsible for making sure that it happens, even if he delegates some of that to somebody else.
Or reporting back to us that it's dead in the water.
Tim, Beth, we're certainly not going to allow this. You're not going to hear that it's dead in the water. Let me be sure that we get you a workable schedule, and I will give you as well an outline of those individuals within the county staffing that are going to be responsible for carrying pieces forward. I can tell you that one of the modules that we did stand up within the last 4 to 6 weeks is procurement and the P card. So, you know, again, I realize that maybe it may be not something that is substantial, but, you know, it again, evidence that we understand that there's still things that we want to bring online, that we want to go live, and we'll give you with a schedule a better idea just exactly what the timeline is for those elements.
Great. Thank you.
You bet.
Now that we've all had our opportunity to whine about that, are you ready to move on to something else?
Understood. I got it. No problem.
So I have a quick question. So, Mark, you were mentioning some stuff we got from Dan. I found a couple emails that we got from Dan. So what were you referring to when you were talking about the 2020 budget, amended budget? What were you referring to? Go ahead.
Within the body of his report, he was giving you updates on where we were trending for this fiscal year with some of the revenue totals and tallies currently. And that's what my specific reference was. Is that the email that you got from him?
Yeah. So I'm looking at one that was the accounting board update was what it was. And I believe.
And yeah, so I see that now, and I hadn't read it yet, so I think that's why I missed it.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Okay.
So I think he included it in as his department head update as well.
Yes.
So
you bet. So, commissioners, if you were able to plug into the EOC meeting this morning, you heard Mo. Convey to everybody on that call that there's a new transition that's occurring with the EOC, that now we're going to have Monday, Wednesday, Friday meetings in the morning as a very significant change to the schedule. The policy committee will now meet only on Tuesday afternoons. Mo also went into some detail about how we're starting to, again, I apologize for the reference, but starting to close some of those ES function drawers. And now the fact that we're actually going to only have four core functions, ES functions, that are going to be open at this particular point in time. So we are indeed beginning to move into that recovery phase. One of the things that also we're going to step back, Chief Weisskopf is not going to be involved in the procurement process going forward. And so that information has been conveyed. And we're having a meeting this week to talk more specifically about what the call center is going to look like. We don't feel that it's necessary, based on the volume of calls and the activity, that we need to have that 7-day-a-week call center staffed, especially through the weekends. So we want to talk in a little bit more specificity about the possibility of going to an email platform as a substitute for that. And we think we can still do that, do it very efficiently, and be very responsive in terms of responding to any inquiries or any questions that we may have. So I think we've got another update from Mo coming forward this week. He's probably able to answer some more specific questions, but please know that we are indeed, as we talked about on Friday, now moving into that recovery phase and all the associated activities therein. So with that, I'll conclude. And Robin may be able to weigh in on some of the details along the lines of the recovery plan as well.
Yeah, I just wanted to just let you know a couple things. One is We've talked to public health, and the line that the number that we have used for doing testing appointments, that is going to be up all the time. So since we have been promoting that if you have symptoms, please get yourself tested. So we wanted to make sure that number is always available. So we have that on the front page of our website, and we'll continue to put out that in advisory. So for example, we're working with the city, and public health has been able to do, is gonna be able to staff two testing, testing times, Wednesdays and Saturdays for the entire month of May. So some of the questions that we have gotten in the past in the call line is, where do I get tested? When can I get tested? That kind of stuff. So we thought at least having that phone number available to constituents that want to get tested, we'll have that available. But otherwise, we'll be going to the email. And a lot of the questions that we have are similar. And so since we have a lot of the answers already in FAQs, and we have that letter from you all to second homeowners, that's, I think, more of the questions that we're getting now, people that want to come. So we're hopeful with a email that we can address the questions and also be consistent in our answers. I don't really have anything. I mean, Mo can talk more about the recovery phase. Actually, we don't want to call it recovery. I know that's the technical term, but it's the safer at home phase. So that's all I have, unless anybody has any questions I can answer.
I just, I had sent these comments to you, Robin, but I guess I would just say, to maybe be mindful of the fact that some people really appreciate being able to make a phone call or to talk to someone. So I just wonder if there's a way, and I'm totally supportive of the idea of not overstaffing this, but I just wonder if there's a way, I think it feels more responsive to people than an email communication does. And so if there's any way that we can maintain the ability for people to talk to a human being on the phone, whether it's, you know, you'll get a call back within 24 hours, or you can request a call or an email response, or I don't know what it is, but maybe just think about that, because I think there's a human component there where people just, I'm worried that if we cut that, people are gonna start calling our office, or they're gonna start calling Carrie, because I think people like the ability to actually talk to a human being. So maybe just be creative about how we can sort of fill that need for people.
Well, Mark, maybe we should, when we have the call with the department heads, we can talk about that. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, you bet.
I do know, I mean, all of us, our voicemail forwards to our email. So even if we kept that call line available so that people could call and leave a message, but then it goes to that email address that you set up so that people can monitor it that way. I don't know if something like that would work, but we have the technology already, I guess is my point, to do something like that.
So I guess my thought here, I don't have a thought because I feel kind of in the dark because we really don't know. We haven't been getting statistics on number of calls. We kind of asked for it when we first started up the call center, and I think maybe we got a couple a week's worth of, well, this is kind of the call requests and the numbers. So I wouldn't have a clue to know what Beth said was right or we're getting any calls and any, because I don't have any information to even help on this. And I appreciate Beth's thought too. I mean, if we just leave a phone number up and it goes into somebody's voice, into somebody's email box, we're kind of still doing the same thing in a scaled down level. So I'm all right with that too, but I don't have any information in my brain to tell me, and that's probably pretty empty anyhow, but you know, the brain part, but I don't have any information to even judge anything, so.
Well, just so you know, Commissioner, we do get about 15 calls a day. I think one of the challenges that's what happens, which Commissioner Melton just outlined, is that public health gets a lot of calls, and they get probably another 15 calls a day that are not necessarily public health questions, but that's where people call. So my guess is that it's probably about 30 calls on average a day between those two departments. And that is not counting environmental health that gets those calls. So I didn't realize that we had that technology from the phone to the email. So that might be a great solution that we keep it up, but that we add the email directly. And then I think the biggest issue is, which I mentioned to Mark, is just the department heads feeling the strain of answering all these questions in addition to doing their regular job.
So the only other information I'd share, which is why I bring up the point, is I've gotten a few emails just from people that I know. I actually think one came from Patrick Delaney and one came from Harry Lambert saying, I'm so appreciative of the people in the call center that returned my call, and they were so professional and they were so great and it was really helpful. And so I just think people, it's good for people to feel like we're being responsive. And I think there's something about being able to call versus just send an email that's desirable to people. So just want to keep that at the front of our minds.
You bet. And thanks for those comments, Doug. I asked that same thing this morning of Scott. Let's get a matrix that shows us what our calls have been from the outset and how we've trended, because like everything, we want to see just exactly what our numbers are so we can make a better determination from there. So he's putting that data together for us, and we'll certainly share that.
I also think there's probably a way, I mean, Robin, you know this, but I think there's probably a way to record the voicemail message. So it says something like, you know, you'll receive a call back within 24 hours or 48 hours or whatever we think is reasonable. You may find the answer to your question on this FAQ page, you know, something that kind of gives people some direction about where to go.
Yeah, that's a great idea, because most of the questions, and we've added things to the FAQs of general questions that we get all the time. So as I've said numerous times, you know, probably the most frustrating thing about this is people don't read.
All right, it is, we're a little after 11:30, and I see that Kelly is on the line. Mark, you don't mind if we push off your last item until after we hear from Kelly, do you?
Absolutely, Tim, you bet.
Kelly?
Hi there, thank you.
Hi.
How would you like to proceed? I sent a little Excel document and some coverage. What would be helpful for you guys?
If you have a document that you'd care to share with us on screen, do you know how to do that?
Yep, I'll do that.
That's a good place to start.
Okay.
I'd also say, Kelly, while you're bringing it up, I think we're just trying to figure out the specifics of, and when we're paying wages, I mean, just refer back to, we're paying wages to the entities, and there nobody's working, and all that stuff as well, too.
Yes. So this is the little cheat sheet that Stacy in accounting helps me with. We've bought $30,000 from Moffitt County and $50,000 from Conejos. They're still in process, but that's who I bought from Conejos for the last 3 years. Park County normally emails me about this time, and I can buy some from them as well. We estimated to transfer $40,000 from TANF. Our current TANF allocation, so not our savings. Are you all seeing this?
Yeah.
Okay. So if you look at the top, this is where I purchased the extra CCAP already from, or it's in the process. And then every year I budget about $40,000 in TANF to go towards CCAP in our current allocation. But we have a little bit more in our current allocation that we can transfer over. And so if we continue the spending that we're doing right now, it looks like we'll have about $59,000 that I either need to buy more CCAP from. And again, I have Park County and La Plata still in the works with that, and Moffitt might even have more. And then the state also has memo IMECL, which is really just that they are saying that they have said, I think I sent that to you as well, but they had said at the state level that they want us to continue to support the centers and spend the CCAP dollars, and that after closeout, they're gonna have a type of mitigation with state TANF dollars to cover any counties that were not made whole. I still think the best bet is to try to either get enough CCAP from other counties or to transfer TANF. Then it doesn't. Then we don't have to wait till after closeout. We'll still be responsible for MOEs and things like that. So that's just to let you know. At this point, with the 59,000, we have enough in our current TANF allocation and our reserves so that it wouldn't hit the county line. And I'm not. I feel comfortable that we can come close to getting all of that $60,000 or close enough that, again, it'll just be out of our TANF. Our current allocation or a little bit into our reserves. And we have 107,000 in TANF reserves. And that can get refilled by next year's allocation. And most years we have, so like right now we're sitting on $21,000 that hasn't been earmarked yet for anything. And then the 40,000 that we have planned to move for CCAP.
So this looks straightforward enough to me, Kelly.
Yep.
At least for this current fiscal year.
Yep.
Do you have any reason to believe that the allocations for next fiscal year will be adequate or sustainable?
No, there's lots of talk of cuts. So I don't know what that's gonna look like for next year. Pretty much the state's doing cuts, everything is doing cuts. I haven't seen it yet of what our new allocation would be. I think there's a real potential that we would have to either consider waitlisting again or figuring out other options or figuring out, I mean, I really appreciate not going on a waitlist. I just think that the challenge is TANF is what we have used to bail out things, and TANF is getting overspent too, right? And if we're having budget cuts, that's going to be really, you know, we don't want to, you know, be trying to make cuts, then put more at risk if we don't have TANF. Now, if we have TANF where we know that we can buy, that's okay. But I think, you know, June 30th or July 1 is when we get our new allocation, and then we'll have to really look at how we want to do that. And I think there's going to be, I think it'll be interesting because I do think there's a lot of people that aren't planning on bringing their kids back to the centers when they can, just with everything going on, with not being employed. Those kind of things. And so it may look different next year too with how many people are accessing it, you know?
So the questions that I wanted to confirm, which I think are confirmed here, but on CCAP, you know, and extending that increase in absences through May, excuse me. So two things. One, we're not spending any more than we would have spent if the centers were open, correct?
The only little difference is that we're paying the parent fee, which comes to about $10,000 a month. So that's the only more that we're spending.
And there was some state money that came that allows us to do that, right?
Yep. That's okay. The IM state memo, but we're going to probably be able to do it with just our own allocation in TANF, but yes.
Okay. And then the second question, if I can remember what it was. Nope, totally lost it. Oh, that there's no expected impact to the general fund from this.
Right.
If you're not able to buy enough CCAP, we have TANF to cover that.
Exactly. Yep.
Okay.
And then if we don't have TANF, we're going to get the state closeout thing.
Right. So can you remind me, when we buy CCAP, how much does that cost us and where does that money come from?
It is the MOE and it's about 10.14%. And that I don't know that answer. I'll have to ask accounting. I think we budget it in our budget.
We pay for it.
What's that?
It comes from the general fund.
Yeah.
Okay. But we budgeted.
But it's budget. It's already budgeted.
It's already budgeted because we already budgeted to buy it. So in that regard, if you'd prefer me not to buy, we can consider just doing TANF because we've already paid the MOE. But the reserves, I still like keeping the reserves. So just thoughts.
Well, I have a question then.
Yeah.
I think that this has been a kind of noble effort on your part and on the part of the county to do what we can to keep these child care centers open. And it's kind of part of the reason that I asked the question about sustainability. So I assume that the child care centers really appreciate what we're doing. And I'm hoping that they're at least asserting that this is keeping them alive and keeping them in business. Because if that's not the case, then what are we doing here?
Yes, Fran does CCAP, and she's heard lots of praise and lots of thanks from the centers for this. And when we sent out, we did put in there that the commissioners have approved this and that we wanted to go towards supporting the teachers. So I can ask Fran if she can share any of those, but they are very appreciative. I don't see that needing to be the same case for June. Hopefully by June they're back up, or they're at least doing something different, and we've given them 2 full months of CCAP, so then we can look at doing differently in June.
So I was going to say something similar to what you just said, Kelly. You know, I don't know if everyone saw the letter that was signed by our large center directors to the newspaper. Quite frankly, I thought the tone of that was a little off. I didn't think it was very professional to send that to the public. But, you know, they can now be open, and I understand that we all have concerns and that it's a challenge. But I would really hesitate to continue supporting them to stay closed when they could be open. And I understand the challenges of being open, but the reason we want them to be open is so that people can go to work. And so for them to continue collecting money from taxpayers, essentially, right, and to not consider being open, I think will be problematic as we go into June. Even, I get it, you know, I'm not super likely to send my kid back anytime soon, but I keep paying tuition because I want them to stay open and have the ability to be open. And there are parents who need them to be able to provide care for kids. And in a lot of cases, it may be a safer environment than being at home, where they're not really being cared for. So I would really hesitate to continue supporting them to do that into June.
Me too. And I'll have Fran kind of give a update to them, kind of give them a heads up that, you know, May has been approved, but we don't imagine it'll be that way in June. Because we are getting families that are applying. There still is emergency COVID, but we are getting lots of families now that their income has changed drastically that they can apply for CCAP. So
this is Doug. Yes. I guess I still have a couple of questions for you, yes. Kelly. So again, it sounds like we're all going to be all right with continuing doing what we're doing through May. I guess the question is what's the positive negatives of and for the maintenance of effort to be using TANF money versus our budgeted general fund money? So I realize you want to have some reserves left in the TANF reserves. So anyhow, help me there. So just close the gap here on the whole thing.
So TANF, our current TANF allocation, we want to spend that for sure, or spend it in the community somewhere. So we can do a couple different things. We already paid the MOE on TANF. TANF MOE is a little bit higher. I think it's about 13% to 14%. It's already budgeted. But you know, we have about 40,000 plus another 21. So we've got about 61,000 in TANF. What we can do is we can use that for lots of different things. We can use it for nonprofits. We can use it for fatherhood. We could use it for supporting child care centers. We can use it for a lot of different things, or we can use it to cover overspenditures in CCAP or child welfare. So I think for sure we want to make sure that we spend that TANF, because we don't want to revert it back because we still pay the MOE on it. So we're going to spend out all our TANF for sure, either by CCAP, child welfare, or giving it out to the community. I know last year I gave out we just gave some to some nonprofits at the end because we've already paid it, and it's better than reverting it back. And then I still think after that, if we've already budgeted in the general fund, I would suggest buying the CCAP, because I feel more comfortable, but this is definitely your decision, of having 107,000 in TANF reserves. So instead of dwindling the reserves, if there's an ability to buy CCAP, But again, that comes out of the general fund. So that's, if you'd rather go in the hole with the TANF reserves than pay the general fund, we could go either way. Just, you know, $107,000 is not that much when we're putting $400,000 into CCAP, you know? So.
How much is budgeted from the general fund? Sorry to interrupt, Doug.
That's all right.
I'll have to follow back up on that. I know we budget that I buy $180,000 in CCAP every year, so whatever that percentage of 180, so 10% of that. So we budget about $18,000 into the general fund for buying what we need to already and what our MOEs already are, plus the buying the extra.
So I'm again supportive of buying the CCAP. What I was kind of, out of my feeble brain here, but I was thinking more into using the TANF monies to come up with our MOE on the CCAP buying of excess dollars from those counties. So that seems kind of crooked anyhow. So maybe I don't feel that good about it anyhow.
I don't think you can, because TANF are federal funds. Like, I don't think we can use our TANF funds to pay the MOE. But I can look into that.
I thought that's what you said earlier, Kelly. So I think maybe we misunderstood what you said.
Oh, I'm sure I said something confusing. Okay. Sorry. Sorry. Thank you.
So for purposes of today's discussion, we're putting off any discussion as to what we're going to do in June until when?
Well, I don't know that we need to make a decision right now. We already have a budget. We haven't cut that budget. So, and we budgeted the MOE on purchasing of X number of dollars from other counties on excess allocation. So I don't know that we need, I guess maybe Kelly needs to answer that more, but I don't know that we need to make any. I think we just need to be a thumbs up on her direction that she's heading, myself. I don't know, am I wrong?
Well, the only decision really is about the number of days of absences we'll allow, right? And so we've said we'll extend that 31 days of absences through May, but I think as of right now, that is not extended to June. And so probably as we get closer, if Kelly for some reason changes her mind and thinks that we should be considering that for June, then she just needs to request that to us with enough time for us to be able to consider it. Right.
That was exactly my question.
Yeah.
Yeah. And my suggestion would be at this point to reduce it to 15 or go back to normal, because to speak to Commissioner Melton's point is I want the centers to open back up, and I don't want it to be incentivized that you can stay closed and still receive full CCAP if there's still a need in the community. And we don't know what will happen in the next 3 weeks, so I'll definitely come back if that's the case. But that's kind of where I want to give the centers kind of a warning, is that we've got it through May, but I'm not sure what it will look like in June. So,
well, great. And I'm thinking about all the scenarios that are going to happen in childcare. So one, they're going to struggle to be at full enrollment, which they need in order to balance their budgets. So there's going to continue to be need. There's also going to be a very high level of need with families. As you said, Kelly, you know, people's incomes will have gone down and they're going to need some support. So I think we're going to have to see what happens, but it seems unlikely that the continuation of allowing an increased number of days of absences is going to make sense, but there may be some other ways we need to look at supporting families and centers.
Yeah. So I have a question, Kelly. Yes. Have you heard, or Beth as well, have you heard from any of the centers as to whether or not they've been successful in procuring Paycheck Protection Program funds?
Yeah.
I think almost all of them have, haven't they, Kelly? The centers.
Yes. Yep. Almost all of the centers have. Yep.
So to the extension that they're receiving those PPP monies, they can operate even with reduced levels of attendance.
Theoretically, they could, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know the specifics on that, but isn't that a loan? And it's a loan contingent upon forgiveness. And the forgiveness is when you bring back your employees to level. So if all of that has to work before it's a grant PPP, I don't know. I don't know anything
well,
about
I
it.
Know
that,
I know So I can, Discovery never laid off their staff. They have kept them employed the whole time. Young Tracks did lay off their staff and then are rehiring them in order to have PPP work for them. I don't know what Holy Name or Heritage Park or any of those other preschools did. I'm not sure, but I know of those two, that's what happened with them.
Well, I think that speaks to the issues and the concerns that we've raised is that between the PPP program and the assistance that we're providing, there's really no good reason for them not to reopen and operate even at a reduced number of clients.
Yeah, I think their concerns are more logistical in nature as far as like social distancing and all those things. But quite frankly, everybody else, it's not easy for anybody to do those things. And I understand that it's equally or more not easy to do it when there are children involved. But quite frankly, people need childcare if they're going to go back to work. Mm-hmm. And that's the business they're in. Mm-hmm. And so they need to figure out what that looks like. Mm-hmm. Speaking of. Yes, Clarky.
Okay, so we're running a little long on time here. I see that we have Robert waiting. Kelly, is there anything else we need to know about right now or about this program in particular?
No, just thank you for your time and thank you for doing that for the community. Appreciate it.
All right, thank you, Kelly. Robert, you're up.
I'm here. How are we doing?
Doing great. What have you got for us?
So I've got a discussion regarding, I'm requesting approval tomorrow, but for early replacement of our 2021 desktops and laptops, we are going to replace, we had 19 desktops up for replacement next year and 21 laptops, and we were discussion to push those forward to go ahead and replace those in 2020. They are funded, they are currently funded in the IT pool. So we've been working with our vendors, and Lenovo is the manufacturer that has the most devices in their pipeline. So that's one of the considerations that we reasons we chose to go with Lenovo, and we're requesting we purchase this either the WSCA or the state government contract, the NASPO, I should say, for the state of Colorado.
So are these Surfaces?
Nope, these are laptops.
Okay.
These are laptops.
One, he doesn't like his Surface.
No, and that's a discussion for a later date because I'm actually going to propose that we migrate away from our Surface also, mainly for battery life and screen size and full functionality.
I love my Surface, Robert. Can this be a choice? Can we choose?
Oh, yeah, I mean, I suppose we could choose. It's more work not to have any standardization.
No, whatever you want, I'll do whatever you want, but I like the Surface.
Well, Beth, when yours wears out, mine will not have been used hardly at all, and I still need to check.
Yeah, my battery hasn't crapped out yet, but I've only had it a year and a half, so who knows?
Right, well, and I think yours, Beth, isn't up for 3 years yet, so you'll get to keep yours for sure.
Great.
So I've got a question. So I'm a little confused, Robert. So you said we had, and I looked at the. So, are we changing our strategy? Are we going to get some more laptops from the desktops that we had? And I realize we're just up in the time frame. So those laptops that were going to be replaced, we're going to replace them now instead of in 2021. Is that correct?
That's correct, and I think you might have recalled over the past 18 months or so that we've talked about that the compression in price and functionality between a laptop and a desktop, we used to have them separated as assets based on the cost, and the cost has tightened up so much in the range where we basically can replace a desktop with a laptop for the same price that we used to be able to price a desktop with. So. I think we're kind of already moving in that direction of migrating desktops to laptops as standard in the county anyway.
So are we buying in, are we going to buy any Surfaces? I mean, any desktops?
We'll continue to buy desktops for a department head or director who identifies that they don't want that person or that position to have a laptop, and or if they're a shared or public terminal, we'll still have desktops.
Robert, yeah. I thought I heard you say that we're going to be considering this tomorrow.
Well, it's in Munis now, and I think Julie, I think you're the one that needs to have to approve it in Munis because it's over $20,000, even though they're controllable items.
No, I mean, are we taking, it looks to me like we are taking action today to authorize this purchase. Is that?
Oh, I didn't know that you could take action on a Monday. I guess, is that some sort of new format or something because of, can we take action to approve this today?
Yes, we can. I believe we can.
It's on our agenda today. I just double checked. It's not on our agenda tomorrow.
Okay.
Yeah. It was on the agenda today.
Thank you, Julie. Then I think I'm ready to entertain a motion to for this request.
Do you want to see if Julie wants to say anything before we move forward? I just noticed it here.
Sure.
Go ahead. I'm here. Robert's doing a great job. He's doing my job for me. No, but it's a good state bid price. I think it's, and it's with our known vendor, CWG. So we're in good shape with this purchase.
I can make a motion. So I move to approve the purchase and authorize the county manager to electronically sign the purchase order to CDW government for 40 replacement laptops and desktops. At $1,167.92 each for a total of $46,716.80 utilizing the NASPO bid for Colorado.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Hey, Robert, when do you expect to receive delivery on these?
I don't, they won't give us a delivery date until the PO is received, but they, Lenovo's are in the pipeline, so we're hoping here within the next 2 to 3 months.
And then I take it that you've been able to accommodate the immediate needs for our staff that are working remotely with your existing stock?
Yes, that's true. We have deployed a fair amount of desktops to people's homes to make that accommodation. But yes, I think everybody that can work from home is working from home on our equipment.
Great. Thank you very much, Robert.
Great, thank you.
You too, Julie. Thank you.
Thank you, Al. Bye-bye.
All right, Mark, I guess we're ready to move back to your multiply interrupted presentation.
Thanks, Tim, and appreciate you working through the schedule. Thanks for keeping us on task. The last item that I had included in my report was an opportunity for us to participate in a survey. And the survey is being sponsored by the consultants, the classification class comp consultants that we've used and have been using, CPSHR, and they made this offer. It is at no cost, at no fee to the county, to go ahead and to distribute a survey, which essentially is asking the employees during this COVID-19 crisis that we're all experiencing, let's go ahead and find out just exactly maybe any concerns or issues that you may have. How do you feel like communications have been? Your feeling of safety, and health awareness. I thought it was a good looking survey when Kathy distributed it, and I got a chance to look at it. It is, as I mentioned in the body of my email, it's available for no cost to us whatsoever on a first come, first serve basis. So they would like to, they being CPSHR, they would like to know by probably the close of business today, whether we're interested in participating. So with that, I would like to provide my endorsement. We may have some other people on the call that want to also weigh in with any feedback or ideas. I'm not sure if Kathy is plugged in, but I just think this is a unique opportunity, commissioners. And I think the information we get out of it would actually be very valuable.
So I reviewed the survey and I agree with you that it would be valuable. I'm really struggling with the way that they define essential workers within this. And I don't know if there's any, if this is like, it has to be put out as is, but they basically are defining the difference that we have two categories, which is essential and remote. And when we first started to try to implement our COOP plan and try to figure out who should work in the office and who should work at home, I don't know. There are people who their work efforts would be considered essential, but they're able to complete them from home. And there are people who have what might be considered non-essential work efforts, but there's other reasons that they need to come into the office. And so I just am really struggling with the fact that they're making just those two broad categories. And I wonder if there's any, I just think it's one, a little confusing because how we might define essential, like if the building burned down, is different than how we would define essential right now. And so I don't know if there's, I assume this is just boilerplate and that they aren't able to make modifications, but that was just the only thing that stood out to me. I would prefer not to make that distinction personally.
Beth, good comments. Let me see if there's any avenue for us to go ahead and to maybe modify that particular question or even not even include that question if we've got that opportunity going forward. You're right, probably the majority of this is boilerplate, but it's worth having the conversation and asking CPS.
Because like there's one section where they ask, how do you feel about your status as an essential worker? Like I'm just really struggling with how people would answer that question. And I understand like how if I work in a grocery store, how I might have some feelings about my status as an essential worker, but as a government employee, I don't know. I think it's a little bit of a false dichotomy.
So I guess my question, did we get this thing? I didn't see it and I didn't look through it. I guess I'm just a little skeptical as well. So what's the purpose of this thing? And how are we going to use it if we need to? And what's the downside? It don't sound like there's much downside, but I guess what is the? I damn sure didn't read it, so I don't remember seeing it. So I guess
it was attached to the bottom of Mark's email with his update.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't. Okay, I didn't see that. Yep.
Doug, you should go through that. I guess maybe the best way to describe this is the same exercise that the commissioners conducted a little over a week ago, where you asked to have a report and an update from some of your social service agencies, state employment office. It's kind of to take our temperature. I guess that's the best way to put it. Maybe the simplest way to put it is we hate to use that term but that's been described in the past. We are in the midst of perhaps a marathon relative to the pandemic. And if that's the case, then how are we doing? Let's take our temperature right now. Are we doing okay in terms of how we're providing for our employees and accommodating everybody through this period of time? And are there any things, any takeaways that might be something that we can do a little bit better, that we can make maybe improvements or maybe fill some gaps? So that's just the way that I see it is it's a kind of a climate survey, if anything else, commissioners.
So my comment on that would be that this is going to be a county-wide set of results, not segregated by department, correct?
That's correct, Tim.
And I can see where there'll be some utility to understanding the general temperature of the of our staff, it sure would be more informative on a department by department basis. And, in particular, I'd be really curious to understand how productively our human service employees are able to work, especially as we consider how we're going to may or may not move forward with the new building. And that's just an one example.
So there was a question in here about what department they work in. So I do wonder if the results might be able to be displayed in a few different ways.
We should.
You're right. I see that now.
Yeah. So that, Beth, thank you for seeing that. We should then be able to do what's referred to, of course, as a cross-tabulation, so that we can see just exactly how that falls within those respective departments and those particular responses.
That's good. That's very helpful. Knowing that now makes me somewhat more supportive of this. I do agree with Doug's question / comment. What's the downside? I'm not able to really think of one right at the moment, other than if the results really don't provide a lot of usefulness to us, and what do we propose to do with these results, are important questions.
So I'd also qualify my initial statement about my concern with the essential workers. Sorry, I'm jumping in and out trying to make Clark lunch here. The essential workers versus remote workers. And if that can't be resolved, then I would feel comfortable with just kind of a statement to employees that's just, hey, sorry, this survey is making a distinction between essential and remote workers. We understand that we have remote workers who are completing essential tasks as well. And so for the purposes of this survey, essential just means people who are still coming into the office, and sorry about that, you know, kind of a statement. And I'd be fine with that. I just think it's a weird dichotomy considering the current circumstance.
You bet. Beth, good point. And I think we can, at a minimum, if we're not able to go ahead and make that modification, I think we can easily make that statement at the outset of the document itself. But commissioners, I guess, again, let me emphasize, if we feel like we get some useful information from this, we're talking about gaps that we may have, that things we can do better, improvements we can make, to provide not only efficiencies, but also a little bit more comfort and peace of mind to our employees going forward, as we anticipate we're going to be in this thing for a while, I certainly think that would be valuable for us as a tool.
So I looked at it some more. I'm fine. I don't see it. There's some downside here, I'm sure, but anyhow, so the truth hurts sometimes. Could be to us even. So, hey, you know, we're good. We got big shoulders. So I think there's a lot of good things that we could be done out of here, and I guess it's just a step forward. So I'm supportive of it moving forward.
Yeah, I'm good with it. Let's move forward with it.
I'd say the same, and I would just also add that there's value in just letting your employees know that you care what their opinion is, even if that's all that really ends up coming out of this, is they look at that and then we understand how we feel about the situation.
And the price is right.
Beth, and the price is right. And Beth, thank you for that comment. That's exactly right. You as an employer, you score many, many points with your employees when you simply ask the question and ask them to participate in something like this. It's a very very clear indication you care, and that's good. I think that's an important message in its own right.
All right, Mark, we have completed your list. I think it's time to move on to our favorite part of our county commissioner meetings, which is random thoughts from the commissioners. Before we get started, one piece of actual business for me is I will be unavailable for our Friday meeting. I'm having a blue light skin treatment being done at the dermatology office on Friday. So I will not be able to attend our meeting on Friday.
They're not going to do that remotely and just beam you up or just zap you through the sky or something?
No, apparently it's a hands-on thing. They really need to zap you in person. So I'm really looking forward to it because the really good part of it is that after I have the procedure done on Friday, all day Saturday and all day Sunday, I need to remain in a darkened room, not exposed to the sun. So, really looking forward to my weekend. So you guys have anything you want to talk about? I see, by the way, Doug, I was over in Craig picking up some tires for my skidster loader, and I saw a sign, Chuck Roby is running for county commissioner. Have you heard?
Yep. Oh, yeah, no, I've been following it all along. And yeah, announced, yeah, back in February, he announced. And so they had their, he thought that he was going to be able to, his opponent is a lady, I know her. Well, anyhow, he thought that she's worked in the public sector in the 501c3 world. But he thought he was going to be able to get all the stuff so he wouldn't have to go through the primary. But I didn't hear whether they did. I guess, did they have you guys have your Democratic assembly?
Yeah, that's all done.
It was done remotely?
Yep, it was actually, it was pretty amazing how well it came together. It was a big Zoom conference with all the delegates there. And you know Catherine, she worked really hard on coming up with some efficient ways to improve the votes. So from my perspective, it was really well done and very successful assembly.
It was better than the regular assembly because I could drink beer while I was doing it.
Well,
and I didn't have to sit there and listen the whole time. I could sort of like turn off my video and walk away and then come back when they were doing something important.
Yeah.
So as you might understand, so there's a big, you know, a big hoopla about getting signatures during COVID for us to petition on. So Matt Carson, he has to do that as well. So we've been having these large conversations about how and when. Originally, it was supposed to start on May 14th. Now they've evidently extended that period. They're going to not start it till June 1st and allow them. So they extended the deadline. So they basically kicked the can down the road for 2 weeks and extended the closing date as well. So we still have to go out and get signature collections. But that's going to be interesting during the COVID thing here.
Yes, it is. I was wondering about that. So is Chuck running for Ray's vacant seat?
Yeah. Yes, he is. Yep.
But Don also has like two opponents, doesn't he?
Yes.
So he has. Yeah.
Just one?
Yeah, Tony. The city councilman Tony Boers is his name or something like that. So, yeah, he's running for Don's seat.
But Ray's not running again. There's just two people running for that seat, right?
Yeah, Ray's not running again, yeah.
I don't have anything on my list, Tim.
No, I mean, I don't. I just have things that can wait until Wednesday when we have the discussion with public health. I'm really curious. The questions that I'm going to be asking are going to be around We did a thresholds that made us feel pretty good about going along with the governor's safer at home order. I don't know that we've had the discussion about what kind of criteria, well, I think we know what kind of criteria, but what the threshold amounts would be if we decided things were going in the wrong direction and we wanted to become stricter. And the reason I bring this up is I was looking at Eagle County's numbers, and during that time frame when they were leading up to getting their exemption from the governor, they really did. They went like 6-7 days with no new cases. But here in the last 10 days, they've had another more than 50 new cases in the last 10 days. And I wonder what kind of numbers would we be looking at when, if and when things start to get worse. And you know what, we have to think about that, because there's no question in my mind that if come June 1st, that there's more relaxations, especially including lodging and travel into our community, that it seems almost inevitable that we're going to see some kind of a spike in numbers. And we ought to be thinking about how we identify what's acceptable, what's not acceptable. But that's just food for thought.
Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, I know obviously they're putting together that kind of metrics document for us that will be probably the basis of that conversation. But it is an interesting question, you know, what the thresholds are.
Yeah, because the stuff that came out of the governor's office was like, well, if you've got 14 sustained days of declining numbers, that's reason enough that you can open up. It'll be interesting to see not only what our local people come up with, but what the state comes up with, because everybody has to recognize the numbers are likely going to go up. And it's got to decide what's acceptable and what's not acceptable. So,
I think part of it is you use all those criteria, right? Because it's partially dependent on our ability to keep it contained via contact tracing and testing, as well as keep the number of hospitalizations low, even if the number of cases goes up. I mean, that's just my opinion, thinking about what we've looked at so far. It's looking at all those things together, which is definitely what the governor has done. You know, they've graphed out if we do 65% of social distancing, we'll stay below that ICU bed threshold, et cetera.
Yeah. I understand it's not just one data point, it's a number of them, but I do think we need to start thinking about it.
So I missed the first probably 7-8 minutes of the EOC meeting this morning. So I didn't hear all of the transition talk that must have happened a little bit. Mark elaborated a little bit on it. I guess I'm just asking, it sounded like the ESF4 and Chuck's position was going to be not utilized anymore, and we were going to go with some internal sources to have what happened. And we had asked also last week to talk about Jennifer Campbell's position and some feedback from Cherry and Public Health and I'm all right continuing on using her if we got work for her, and I'm all right with that. So if somebody could fill me in what was discussed on that first 7 minutes, I'd appreciate it. Maybe you can.
Were you
Mark,
on,
you
Tim?
Can do that.
No, I was not at all.
I'll just state for both of you, I won't be too cynical, but Mo really went out of his way to thank Chuck for all the work that he's been doing and how amazing Chuck was. And Chuck wasn't even on the call. I just thought it was interesting. But anyway, it was basically rolling that ESF4 function into ESF7, I think what he was proposing on that. But Mark, sorry, you can elaborate. I just wanted to point out.
No, Beth, that's a good summary. I think, Doug, again, that Mo did a really good job of stating that we are indeed very much engaged in this transition. And so we are stepping down to this new level. If there's any questions, if there's any concerns, certainly EOC is, as it functions now, is prepared to adapt to that. Getting back to your reference to Jennifer, I have a conversation coming up this week with Carrie, and I will reiterate to her that if we feel like there's important duties and roles and responsibilities for her, we don't want to cut that loose and not have any kind of gaps along those lines. But let's just make sure we also quantify what that looks like, because I know one of our conversations on Friday was, what's the relationship there? Is it contractual? And make sure that we solidify that as well. But message delivered is, if we feel like that there's some good services being provided, we want to make sure we still take full advantage of it. We don't want to make sure that, we want to make sure that Carrie's not shorted on that end.
So when Carrie presented the plan moving forward to do contact tracing efficiently, didn't that implicitly assume that we would be keeping our current level of contract nursing?
Tim, I don't want to maybe step out of bounds in terms of maybe not having the exact information, but it's my understanding that there was going to be separate teams that would be assigned to the contact tracing responsibilities, and that each team would have oversight for somebody in that nurse capacity. That's
so
at least
Jenny Kimball, though, is not a nurse. She's the epidemiologist that we contracted with to run that vulnerable populations task force, which was originally focused on Casey's Pond. But then once they got to outbreak status, CDPHE is really managing the Casey's Pond stuff, as far as I know. So I'm not sure exactly what Jenny Kimball is doing now, but the real question is, what, you know, does Carrie have work that she needs Jenny to support with moving forward? But she's not a nurse, she's an epidemiologist.
Thank you for that distinction, that helps. All right, seems like we've got a relatively quiet Monday. I'm sure that we'll all go to hell tomorrow or the next day, but.
Did you guys enjoy the scan I sent you from the Facebook post yesterday? Oh. So from Representative right. Melton?
Yeah.
I mean, Representative Pelton?
Yeah.
So. And Lene is on the phone too, so he is that. Isn't he from originally from Morgan County? Isn't that his? He was a commissioner there in Morgan County, and that's where Linnea was talking about as well.
You might be confused. You might be thinking of Byron.
They're
from different.
No, Rod was
Byron.
I don't know. Rod,
or I think Byron represents a different county than what Rod did. I'm not sure. I could be confused about that.
But I think it still is a representative from all of that area. Well, go ahead, Linnea.
I looked him up. He's from Cheyenne Wells. So a little further east where they do have zero cases. But it was interesting. And I would add, of course, it causes me to go down rabbit holes. His most recent opinion piece in the Sterling paper actually states that he sees why the initial shutdown was needed, and now it's time to move forward. So he changed his tune a little bit.
Well, you know, I may not agree with Rod, but he is genuinely a very nice man. Always like Rod. So,
okay, so I guess we're at 10:30 tomorrow again, huh?
Yep. If I don't hear anything else, let's go ahead and adjourn.
I just want the Restaurant Association is going to be having some meetings, and I think they're scheduled at 11 o'clock to tomorrow, and Kara had asked me if I would attend, like I have been. Oh, no, sorry, it's not till Wednesday, but I think I will prioritize trying to go to that unless we have something that you guys really don't want me to miss. I think it'd be good to engage with them.
No,
that's not tomorrow, that's Wednesday.
That'd be fine, Beth, and if we are dealing with subject matter that we really feel like we need to have you present for, we'll just delay it until you're available.
Okay, that sounds great.
So, Beth, you know, you bring up an interesting point, Beth, too, and I didn't want to drag the meeting out, but
you're okay.
Another one coming up here, too. But anyhow, so we've had these discussions about what it would look like to have industry groups or different organization groups to be helping design the solutions to their collective issues and problems in relationship to COVID. I guess, how do we think that looks? And I mean, that ought to be run at least to us and through to us. I just want to know how that looks. Does that, and again, what's that model look like? And again, I don't have an opinion. I really support the idea of we provide the objectives that we want to see out of those things, and then they, the goals and objectives, and allow them to figure out how they create the solutions, just because the fact that we don't know what the hell they're doing. I don't know what the hell the restaurants are doing. So I just bring it up, and we don't need to talk about it now, but we ought to keep in mind that what that looks like and that model that looks like and how we can figure out how it works.
Hey, I got to take this call. I'll talk to you guys in a minute.
I guess all I would say is that I think, you know, as our representative on the chamber board and being engaged with all those folks, I'm happy to attend these lodging association, restaurant association meetings. And though I have lodging association tomorrow and then I'll have restaurant association on Wednesday, and I'm happy to just sort of have that conversation with them about what it looks like and really use Kara as a resource too in trying to navigate that, because I do think they're already kind of doing it. It's just figuring out, like you said, the right process for giving us input and feedback. I think same thing with Main Street and retail. Well, I don't have anything else. I don't know if you do, Doug.
I don't have anything else either. We can just call it quits, and Tim will know we're gone when he comes back.
I guess so. And the only other thing is, Robin, do you need anything from us? Are you good on videos and blog posts? And do you have any specific asks for the commissioners at this point?
No, you. We'll do the radio redo the radio thing on Wednesday. And right now, I'm drafting the statement we talked about, clarifying the 10-mile rule that we talked about on Saturday, remember, on the public health order. So I'll be sending that to you later today if you can just take a look at it, that, and then we can put that statement out. But otherwise, I'm good. And, you know, anybody wants to write blog posts, including you, Mark, feel free.
Thanks, Robin. Your internet, where do you live, Robin? When I told my husband the internet went out, he wondered if you lit where you lived.
Oh, I live on Steamboat Boulevard, but I'm really high up.
Yeah, you're high up. I thought maybe you were south. That's kind of where that storm
came. No, I'm really up on the top of the hill. And then when the storm came through, somehow it like zapped the outside cord. So we had to get it replaced. So it was fine. Living in the country.
All right. Thank you, guys. See you tomorrow.
Thank you. Good.